Chris Shalom, You're the Reason. Let me ask you, how much time do you spend, well, let's just break it down just a little bit, on Instagram? How much time on Twitter? How much time on Facebook? How much time, you name it. And then, and of course, at that point, I'm just asking, how much do you spend on each of those? Now my question is, whatever you're doing online, when you put it all together, how much time are you spending? By the way, speaking of, how much time are you spending? How many of you are still spending time on MySpace? Yes, indeed. I remember somebody got a kick out of that. And that was about 2 years ago when someone was talking about MySpace. Man, you remember when they really kicked it off, though? All right. Well, like I said, we're going to get some of the 411 on some of the tricks of the trade that may be part of the reason that you spend so much time on there. And hey, I'm sure that some of it, you know about all of it. I mean, you know, you got to keep up with this, you got to keep up with that. You want to know this, you want to know that. Yeah, that may be surface level awareness though. Let's just take a listen and see if there may be something else going on below the surface that also may have to do with why so many spend so much time with the technology.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in to Seeker Plus. This is our new series on internet obsession, the first episode in that series. So subscribe, make sure you get all the episodes. The next one will be next Thursday. If you haven't watched Seeker Plus, we take a big topic and we break it into chunks so that we all understand it a little bit better. So today we're going to explore this connection obsession, but not in the way that you normally get it explored. We're not going to talk about rehab or any of those things. We are going to talk about how people spend 1,000 hours on Instagram and how they get us to do that, or like 1,000,000 hours on Wikipedia, because I'm on it all the time. How people get addicted to the internet is a really important question for the modern times, and it has to do with a lot of different factors in psychology and design and engineering. So we're going to explore the science of all of these different things. So let's kick into it. Think about being in an elevator, right? That awkwardness that you have. Maybe you started talking to them outside the elevator, now you're in the elevator, you don't want to talk to them anymore, so your hand starts creeping toward your pocket or your purse and you pull out your little phone device. Not for any reason, you just pull it out for something to stare at. Does that mean that you're addicted to your phone? Even if you recognize it and you don't have a reason for looking at it, when you check your notifications, when there aren't any, you know there aren't any, it's been 5 minutes, but you pull it out and look at it anyway? You ask yourself why? We can't really call it internet addiction. It's not actually diagnosable. But there are people that are starting to recognize this, as I'm going to call it, internet obsession. Today, designers hook you into their systems using psychology and behaviorism. They have no laws to stop them from doing this. And they design it this way on purpose to keep you coming back again and again. They want you to want more and hopefully spend real money inside of their systems. There's a guy who is a game economist, and his name I cannot pronounce, but it's Raman Shokrizadeh. And he told NPR, as you play video games or surf websites, they are tracking your clicks, they are running tests, they're analyzing the data. Right now, wherever you are listening to this, it's served up to you via a computer network. That computer is listening to you listen to this. It's figuring out how you're listening and how long, whether you listen at 2 times or regular times or even slower for some reason, whether you're listening in a car or walking around. It can learn so much about you, and they're pooling all that data with the 1,000,000,000 other people who are using their services all the time. The YouTube algorithm wants you to spend time on their website. They look at everything you watch, how long, when you leave, what videos you like, things you comment on. They try to guess what else that you would like to keep you coming back to YouTube.com. Netflix does the same thing. Do you ever notice that your thumbnails are different on your Netflix than they are on your parents' or on your partner's? That is on purpose. The Netflix global manager of creative services said that, quote, artwork was not only the biggest influence to a member's decision to watch content, but it also constituted over 82% of their focus while they browsed Netflix. You spend an average of 1.8 seconds on each one of their key art, the little thumbnails of Stranger Things and whatever else. You spend 1.8 seconds on each one before you make a decision. They know that, and they're tracking it. Facebook knows how long that you stop on something to gaze at it. Whether you like it, whether you click on it, whether you watch the video, whether you do anything, they know that you stopped scrolling to look at it. They know that. They do this and they learn about you so that they can make you spend more time on their websites, because that time is their business model. They do this with three big things: data, research, and behavior. I call these the three H's. They keep you coming back with the three H's: happiness, habituation, and hella data. And I had to get another H, okay? I had to get another one. First, let's go with happiness. Every brain has a reward system. It comes built in. It's in our wetware. It helps you get out of bed in the morning, helps you get interested in social interaction, keeps you interested in things like food and sex. It also is associated with things like drugs. But laughing and friendly interactions and encouragement when you do things correctly, those all have to do with dopamine. It's a neurotransmitter and it's part of the reward system. So just quick dopamine sidebar. I'm gonna try and make this as quick as possible. So science media literacy 101. When someone says that dopamine is addictive as cocaine or something like that, that's a little disingenuous, because dopamine and serotonin and oxytocin and all these other brain neurotransmitters, they're released from the brain's reward system. They're doing it all the time. And so when we say something is as addictive as cocaine, what we're really saying is the brain's only reward system is squirting out these hormones that make you feel a certain way. So when it comes to things like your crush, you maybe made them laugh at your joke, that's gonna release some dopamine from parts of your brain. When you ingest your favorite food, that's gonna release dopamine from parts of your brain. When you make friends, that's gonna release dopamine from parts of your brain. And when you do your drug of choice, that's gonna release dopamine from parts of your brain, but a lot more of it. It's sort of like hacking your brain a little bit. So there are a lot of problems with saying that dopamine has to do with cocaine and other things. So just know that when you read it. That's end media sidebar there. So dopamine is very important when it comes to the brain's reward system. It's one of the more well-known neurotransmitters. So we're just going to use that as kind of a shorthand of saying your reward system squirts out chemicals like dopamine, serotonin, oxytocin. And it's too complicated to just say that is happiness or that is addiction, but it plays a big part in it in your head. So a reward is a reward, whether it's a lot or a little. So the second H is habituation. And this has to do with psychology, specifically behavioral psychology. Psychology is the study of us and how we tick. And this is a pretty big deal. Dopamine makes you comfortable. It helps you anticipate things so that you can have that reward, and it gives you that certainty of happiness when you get it. In the 1930s, there was this guy, B.F. Skinner, and he invented this concept of behavioral psychology. He created something called operant conditioning. It's behavioral science. It's actually a psychology that is empirical. You can study it with conditions and have external and internal validity. I, full disclosure, have an undergrad degree in this specific type of science. And essentially what happens is you give a hungry rat food when it presses a lever in a box, right? That rat has now learned to associate food with the lever press. It only works when the rat is specifically hungry, so what they usually do is they don't actually use food. Sometimes they'll use water or some other reward. But the point is that they can teach these animals how to do this and explore this science. So B.F. Skinner did this in what's called the Skinner box with pigeons. And you can use a time interval to study this interaction. So you get a pigeon to peck a specific spot, and then you give it some food. And it pecks it again, and it gets some food. And it pecks it again, and it gets some food. And then over time, you change what behavior you require to get the food. So say a time interval change. You can only get food once every 60 seconds. No matter how many times you peck that spot or hit a button or whatever, you don't get any food until it's been 60 seconds. The pigeon and the rat, they can figure that out. They can learn that, oh, there's no reason to waste my energy. I'm not going to get food for a while. So they wait, they peck or push the lever or whatever, they get their food. However, there's another condition, and that's a variable time interval. So imagine instead of saying every 60 seconds the rat's going to get food, you add a variable. So you say between 30 and 200 seconds, somewhere in there, if you peck or push the lever, you get food.
Granted, everyone, we're not rats or pigeons or anything like that. But remember now, a lot of times the experimenters are running experiments using some of these other creatures because that's helping them kind of get a window into how things either might or will work with us humans as well. And remember now, he's going to be relating this to how people, the experimenters, are able to get so many humans hooked on the technology. Let's listen to a few more minutes before we go to break.
What happens here is the subject inside the Skinner box goes crazy. When Skinner did this with pigeons, one pecked 87,000 times in 14 hours. Because uncertainty is a nightmare when it comes to behaviorism. They weren't sure when they were going to get the food. Was it 30 seconds? Was it 200 seconds? Now I have to peck constantly because I just don't know when the food is coming. How many likes are you going to get on your next Instagram post? You have no idea. So you better post one. And then post one again, and then post one again, and then post one again. Because you want to make sure that you get more certainty, not more uncertainty. There was actually a study of this. 32 students at UCLA submitted photos to researchers, and the researchers put them into an fMRI and faked the number of likes those photos got. They said that the photos had more likes than they really did, and then they looked at their brains and where the blood was flowing. That's what an fMRI does. A functional magnetic resonance imager does is it maps the blood flow in your brain. They found that the fMRI lit up in the striatum, which is a little reward part of your brain, a little sassy bit, and they found that lots of likes equaled more likely to click on a picture. They also found more blood flow to the social and visual regions of the brain. Now, they're doing this to understand why we like Instagram so much. What does it do for us? And it triggers those little reward systems in our brain that make us want to do that thing and anticipate that reward, right?
So are you beginning to kind of get a feel for what might be happening behind the scenes, beneath the surface, that has folks going back for more and more and more and more? You are the reason. A little bit more on that when we come back. And let's move into discussion of, well, asking that question. Partners for life?